Welcome to Growth for Good. In this episode, we're joined by Neil Sykes, the founder of Clan Alchemy, a business culture consultancy that helps organizations turn plans into action and to build connected and motivated teams. Neil's down-to-earth approach cuts through the jargon to unlock purpose, innovation, and growth for leaders and teams alike. He's inspired by the idea that we can all be both a masterpiece and a work in progress. Clan Alchemy, that's quite an unusual name. Tell me more about that. What does it mean? What does it mean to you?
It's a great name, I think, because last time I was out and about at a business event, we had some people coming up to us just because of the name. So they had no idea what we did, but they wanted to know about the name. So good question. Clan, if I take it in two pieces, so the clan first is, it's a clan is a group of people. And that group of people can be whoever you want that group of people to be. So it could be the team that is working on Project X. It could be that team and other people who are a department within a company or an organisation. It could be the entire organisation. Or it could be if you're pulling together a team from various organisations, how they're going to work together. So they become the clan. An alchemy. Alchemy was something from the Middle Ages where people tried to make...
creating strange metals.
To make gold, yeah, obviously, to make the good stuff, the valuable stuff. I thought that was a really good... It's a really good metaphor for what we do. It is taking the resources that people already have and how, by tweaking those, we can turn them into something that will... answer a challenge,
except
whatever.
Your alchemy works.
Obviously, It works because we don't just look at it from a process perspective. We look at it from the human angle, and that's always our starting point. The common denominator of every organisation in the world is humans. That's what they all have. They all do different things. They all do different things really well. But it is how the people... within the organisation gel as well.
I think we're going to find out more about how that works as we go through the conversation just now, but you've got decades of experience that's led you to this place. Tell me about your journey and where you started from and how you've ended up here.
Okay, so a decade has aged me a bit, thanks. fair dues.
It's more impressive than you've had 2 weeks in experience.
Fair dues. I think it's 28 years of corporate experience and then another, four or five on my own, something like that. I work corporately. I started at the bottom. My last 8 years were on the board. And so in an organisation, particularly towards the end of my career, I've either instigated things, been subject to things, had to mop things up, and seen the effects it has on people in organisations. So nothing surprises me. I have lived that for 28 years, 8 of which at a senior level where... you know, I was probably responsible for a lot of it. So I see the effect it has. I see the politics that happens because of it. And because I was told I was good with people throughout my career, I always got a people brief, culture brief, that kind of thing. And that made me go down another avenue.
You were the guy for this kind of thing. That's what you said.
Yeah, mainly because others don't want to do it. It's one of those, everybody else has taken a step back, and you're the one still stood forward. But I know I really do enjoy it. And I went on a journey with NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. It's a psychology of human understanding. It's the study of subject, how everybody understands the world differently, and accepting those differences and then learning to work with them. So for about 12 years working corporately, I had this running in the background and I would apply that at work, and it's since become a great part of my practice at Clan Alchemy. And just before I left corporate life as well, I also went on an innovation practitioner workshop for a model called the Six Eyes of Innovation, which was out of Singapore, and it kind of codifies innovation and how it's done, but it's people-centric and it's purpose-centric, two things that are really important to me, people and purpose, that form the basis of my business, I think. And so these are the things I alchemize with. And I believe there's only two of us practitioners in Scotland, so that's quite a USP.
So quite a kind of individual thing. It's a rare resource. To get this working alchemy that you can find to bring people and purpose together.
Yeah, It is indeed. Yes, absolutely. I think it's because I do a lot of on purpose, and it's this having a really good why is what drives people, it's what motivates people. We only ever do things, even though we might not admit it, we only ever do things when we think what's in it for us. And
so it's human nature, quite literally human nature, isn't it?
It is, it's proven. There are studies out there that say so, and there are three primary motivators. One is to be motivated by power. Don't get too hung up on that word. Being motivated by power means that you just want to, like if you're running a race, you'd want to win. Yeah, you'd want the gold medal, position one on the podium, take the tape. Affiliation, that you just want to be part of the race. You're really glad to be there, part of a team. And then the other one is achievement, which is kind of not winning, but being better than yourself. I knocked a second off my best time, that kind of thing. And we all have one of those that is dominant. Learning that as well and how teams gel is really important.
What is the biggest challenge that organisations, businesses face when they're trying to put these things into action? What's the biggest challenge an organisation has to deal with?
I think it is defining, well, I do a lot of what called brand compass work, which is defining purpose, vision, mission, and then the values and behaviours that will underpin it. And I see a lot of websites out there with companies' vision and mission. It's all conflated. They've got them mixed up. So I think it is defining what they are to begin with. And then involving as many people as possible in the development of that. I mean, if you've got a massive corporation, that's not going to happen. But if you've got a company of like 15 people and an SME, then, it's getting as many people involved in changing. It might even be changing the direction of the company, but, stating what it is and why it exists. Because I find that people don't resist change, but there is this being change. So not doing this top down is always.
So how do you mean by that?
Well, if I don't know, if you've got a managing director who comes in and just says, right, this is what we're doing now, and it's completely going against a set of norms that were already in place, and these people are like, well, why? But if you've got a good why, then you know why. That's why I think getting as many people involved in defining that why is important.
Does having that why properly defined reduce the resistance dramatically in terms of getting the change in place?
It does if you have. It has to state what the company, why the company exists beyond making money. Yeah, if it's a private sector company. It's the direction of travel. It should be inspirational. It should, when you say it, it should elicit a response from the person you're saying it to, like, oh, that sounds interesting. How do you do that? What do you mean by that? So it's a massive conversation opener. And particularly younger generations now are much more purpose-driven than we who've been in business decades. They're much more likely to want to come work with you if you've got a great purpose statement and a great vision as well. So you could become construction company A or construction company B doing exactly the same thing. But if construction company A has got a great purpose and vision for, where it wants to be, where it's headed, it's much more likely to attract and retain good talent.
That brings me on to another question then, because culture is often seen as a kind of a soft subject, you know, something that doesn't perhaps really kind of like isn't important in the bottom line or doesn't show there necessarily. How do you persuade companies? How do you show them that it can make a real tangible difference to the growth that they're going to experience if they adopt these things properly?
I think there are studies out there, quote them now, I cannot, but show that, you know, companies like 20% more successful in the, when if they're purpose-driven.
I mean, it makes sense. It sounds logical, but obviously, you know, saying, look, you're going to come in and talk about the direction of a team and the purpose for a team, you know, it might not appear to everybody to be such an important thing, but it clearly is.
I agree to some people. Do you know what? It is a tougher sell up here than it is in other parts of the country. You know, should I walk into, you know, businesses in the likes of London, which is, you know, that's a country on its own.
Yeah.
But even like larger cities like Glasgow, Manchester, you can go into place and that's, oh yeah, we know what that is. Yeah, we've got someone who does that. Yeah. We know all about that. Whereas here, it is a real push to get that message through. But up here, there's talk of, you know, a skill shortage. And yes, people will leave the Highlands. People will come back to the Highlands, but people are going to leave. There's going to be a massive influx if, you know, the 11,000 jobs that the Green Freeport is going to attract is the actual number, that we're going to have to be a lot cuter about looking after people than we are by just doing the processes of a business.
People retention thing is so important to bottom line, because if you're keeping somebody who's good, not only are you keeping somebody who's good and they'll be a good performer, but you're not having to, you know, replace somebody, go through the recruitment costs, go through the training costs, maybe get somebody who's not performing at the same level. So if you've my understanding is that if you do these cultural changes, make these improvements, and people are more inclined to stay with you, that's going to be a big difference.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned recruitment and retention, because that costs money. And I think when you can start showing tangible elements of where it's going to be cheaper to do this, whilst you will have an outlay on doing that, in the long run, that's going to look after itself. Because I know one company that I deal with, they seem to be forever recruiting. But yeah, you can put a stop to that.
Indeed, and you talked earlier about neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. You're clearly, that's a very big part of what you put forward for people and help people with. Tell me more about how that works for improvement and what it does for people when you're using that process to help develop people and companies.
It's, I think the main use is that it lets people, and if you're dealing with leadership teams as well, it lets people know that just because they see the world in this way, it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody else is going to see the world in that way. We all edit the world that we experience according to our own values, our own beliefs, our own memory systems, the language we use, and what we delete from our experience, selective hearing, for example, how we make it fit with our belief system, and then how ultimately we make meaning of situations. And those meanings can be good, can be not so good. And I think from a leadership perspective, why this is important to know, that your truth isn't the truth. I mean, it's the whole reason, you know, you get trial by jury, isn't it? You know, because it is not just the judge that's delivering what he or she thinks.
This is objectivity over subjectivity. So your own particular subjective view.
Objectivity of, yeah. I kind of say objectivity. I don't think objectivity exists because...
Not really. Not in reality, but as close as you can possibly get to it. Yeah.
I think it's the highest level of intrasubjectivity is what we, you know, loosely call objectivity. Mm. But it's like, I mean, it's like how all reality TV works. I mean, you know, something that is a film or a drama series that is scripted where you get to see every angle of it. But like reality TV, I mean, like The Traitors, which is on now, for example, only we, the viewers, have got the full view of who the traitors are and who the faithful are. The rest are just filling in the gaps. So there are multiple truths according to those people. And when a leader accepts that there are multiple truths, then they can start to adapt. Then they start to think, do you know what? If I'm not giving enough context, if I'm not going to give enough clarity, then people are going to fill it in. And we're really good at, I think one of, I can't remember who in NLP says, but they say that as humans, we're just meaning-making machines. Something happens, we make it mean something. You know, oh, he's late every day, that means he doesn't care about this job. Well, does it mean that? You know, what else could it mean that he's late every day? Because if we're not engaging with why he's late every day, we'll put our own meaning in there. The client challenges your fee, oh, we make it mean, oh, they think I'm not worth it. Yeah, but it's not. It's not a fact. It's a perception. And so NLP is all about working with these perceptions. What else could it mean? What part am I playing in this meaning thing that's going on? What can I do about it? How can I become more accountable for my actions? How can I take more responsibility? And when I'm doing that and other people see I'm doing that, then people copy, you know, and that's kind of like much better.
This relates to the classic where the boss says, I told you to do this, and somebody said, you told me to do something different, but that's, and then you come back to the paper, that's not what I meant. Is it wrapped up in there, that communication thing that about the understanding of what is required, what's and what's being asked of people? Is that part of it?
Absolutely. And that happens everywhere, not just at work, it happens at home. I'll tell you a funny story, one of my favorite stories, where I was on a podcast, and I told one story that the lady who was doing the podcast said, oh my God, that's just made so much sense of something that happened to my mum and dad. I said, go on. And she said, well, it was Christmas, and her mum sent her dad to the supermarket with the shopping list, everything written on, and he was ages before he was back.
Wasn't me, was it?
It wasn't you. Well, I don't know. This may be a universal experience. You'll find out when I get to the end. So it was ages coming back. And then came back and she said, well, you got everything, love. Yeah. And he said, yeah, I've got everything, but I could only get 70 of your bread rolls. She goes, what do you mean, 70 of your bread rolls? Well, you wanted 100. She says, what do you mean I wanted 100 bread rolls? Well, it says it here on the list. And she looks at the list and she says, that says loo rolls. So not only had he read one loo rolls as 100 rolls, but he'd inserted the word bread in his head. But he, because he had to go to another supermarket, was like really proud of himself because he'd gone the extra mile to deliver this rubbish. So it was kind of like, so literally we are doing it. To him, the meaning was 100 bread rolls, but to her, the meaning was absolutely clear, loo rolls.
I blame the handwriting, personally.
So. Well, you see, but again, you know, it's exactly what they say. The meaning of the communication is the response that you get. So that's what it meant to him. So yeah, it happens in work all the time, as well as, you know, at play.
So I know from hearing from you beforehand and at other events that you are at your best in a crisis. Tell me how you cope with things, what you kind of do, what your skills are there, and how what has that taught you about leadership, about dealing with crises?
I enjoy the energy of a crisis.
You're a fixer.
Yeah, I'm very much. Yeah, I think in a way, yeah. Throughout my corporate life, I worked in a part of the business where everything was in real time. So we did lots of data collection from for researchers then to do their researching with. And if anything ever went down or like a server's going down, for example, that kind of went down, or people not turning up for something, that had a financial impact. And you literally had to think on your feet all the time. So I think that's where I'm good in a crisis. I can literally move from one thing to the next to the next. I'm not one for long-term planning.
Is that something you want to improve on?
I don't know. It's kind of, I think you're always better at things you're already good at, aren't you? You can get better.
So get other people to help with long-term
planning. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If we were working together and you had your long-term plan and, part D of your long-term plan, suddenly just went, sort of bottoms up, then that's when I would come in, I would fix it like that, but then I'll give it back to you. I don't want to be involved in moving it to E, F and G. I will come and just do that bit. I live in the present. When people ask me, do you want to do something next week? That is so far away from me. And I'll kind of get paralyzed by that, so it is living in the present.
That's good. If you're somebody who's good at helping and dealing with crises, the fact that you're living in the moment is important because you have to find a way out of whatever that crisis is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does that taught you about leadership in your view?
It's something that leadership is a mixture of everything.
Right.
Because if everybody was like me, nothing would get done.
Very honest.
It's kind of like we'd have ideas in a vacuum, or we do things in a vacuum because there's no long term thing that we're working toward. When I'm preparing for a workshop or a training or a coaching client, I work completely in pencil and it's on a flip chart and it's in my office, and I will have ideas at random times. I literally have to rush back upstairs.
Is it all consuming for you when you've got this in your mind?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely is. I'm at my worst in front of a desk. I literally have a visceral reaction to it. I could do this. Unless I get a bit of like hyper-focus, an Excel spreadsheet that's got to do certain stuff, I can get into that and like block out the noise, but it's for blocking out the noise. The same, but I love scouring these free image sites that I can use that in presentations and stuff. I could spend hours doing that. But again, that's procrastinating.
Everybody has to do that to a certain extent, don't they? They all have to. Everybody has to find their place where they can just go and have a bit of a play around. Yeah.
And I'm very much like I leave it to the last minute as well. And because when the last minute is approaching, then I get focused. Then that's when I get calm. When I'm like 90% sure of what I'm going to say. And there's that wee bit of panic there, but that is really, it's the opposite. It's what calms me down.
So that's the way you're approaching it. What's the impact when you start delivering on it? What's the impact?
When I deliver, I absolutely love delivering. It is my complete happy space. Give me a microphone, shove me on stage. Absolutely love it. I've not tried stand-up yet.
Is that coming soon?
I don't think so. Curveballs. I love curveballs. But again, it's like knowing your stuff. That's in the bag. Knowing you've got a great presentation behind you. That's in the bag. The only thing you have to manage then is your state.
Well, let's come back for a second to some of the benefits that you're going to give to people when you're working with them. You've got a quote that you like to use. That's really nice.
Sophia Bush, yes.
You want to tell us what that is?
It is that you can be a work of art and a masterpiece simultaneously. I just think that is so brilliant because that applies to absolutely everybody, 100%. We're all working on ourselves all the time. So, but we're all just exactly how we should be all the time. So that's the masterpiece bit, yet we want to work on
that
ourselves.
Continual improvement kind of thing that's in there.
Yeah, I just think it's brilliant when you have that. And my other quote, and I don't know who this one's from, but what other people think of you is none of your business. Massively liberating as well. So I think between those two things, I've just allowed me just to put loads of stuff down
when you're working with people and you're using those, that kind of term, that kind of language, what does that give to them? What does it bring to them?
I hope that it allows them. I usually do quotes and stuff like that when I've talked about a model of communication, that model of communication that says that we all experience the world differently. So they can move away from, oh, it's me, you know, or, you know, I'm not as good as.
That must be incredibly empowering. You must get great feedback when that happens.
Do you know what? I love training people on things like that more than anything. I love doing purpose, vision and mission, absolutely. I love doing innovation and growth. But if I could only choose one, it would be that.
Freeing people up,
telling them how a limiting belief is held together, how it's structured, and therefore how you can unstructure it. Yeah, I mean, it's all these things that this is absolutely possible. Like I said, some people think I can see into their souls, and I cannot. I have a face that people open up to, apparently.
Yeah. Well, obviously, because that's why you're on this Growth for Good podcast. But so you've got that empowering mindset. You said earlier that you're in a crisis. You're all consumed by what you need to do to help people navigate that crisis to come out of that. That must be quite a lot of internal mental pressure for you. What is the Neil like who isn't Clan Alchemy or takes time out from Clan Alchemy? Or tell me a bit about yourself. What else do you do?
What else am I like? I think I'm knackered actually.
I know, for example, you're a great animal lover.
I got lots of cats. Yeah. 4 cats.
Accidental cats.
Yeah. Yes.
How did they come to
the accident? Well, we moved up with 3. One of them, she was quite old. She had 3 legs. Mm. Bless her.
Yeah.
And then one of them, after we'd been here like 2 months, got lymphoma. So we had chemo every 3 weeks for a year. So pet plan, folks. I couldn't push that enough. And he was given a year prognosis. So we thought, well, then we lost the 3-legged one. So we thought we're going to have one on its own. So we thought we'll go and get another kitten. And the SSPCA wouldn't let you take one. You have to take 2. And of course, the one from the lymphoma one, who was given a year's prognosis, 3 years later, still here. So that's why we've got accidentally 4 cats.
I mean, you do other things as well. You're involved in the community in different ways.
Yep, Highland Pride. So we've got the date for that next year. Forgotten. June the 6th, Saturday the 6th of June. So we're going to do that in conjunction with Eden Court again. I really love doing that. I, unsurprisingly, am involved in the show in the Empire Theatre on the stage with a microphone.
Because there's a microphone and a stage.
Put me on it. So that's good. You know, there's a lot of give back. I think community is one of our values. Courage, community, and creativity. So, you know, have the courage to do something creative for the benefit of a community. So that's the business value. So everything we do is kind of, does it serve one of these things?
What's next on the agenda for you? Are you looking to expand the business? Are you working to a business plan that you... I know you talked about being in the moment, but is there expansion plans? Or are you working with other people? What's next for Neil Sykes?
Do you know what? It's just to be happy, actually. Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day who said, you need to scale up and sell. And I can't bothered. I mean, literally, if I have enough to tick over and I can't see myself stopping doing this because I enjoy it too much.
So anybody watching this and thinking about using Clan Alchemy knows that they're not going to get a hard sell pitch from you.
No, they're not. I'm working with one other person, and there's probably going to be an announcement later about that. But somebody who...
So I can't tease you to tell us what it is. No.
Somebody who does what I call... I have this thing in business that's called the swimming cat. I don't know whether I told you about it before, but there was myself and there was Simon. Simon now is head of innovation at Walker Shortbread. And when we used to present together, he would do the bits I didn't like. Yeah? So these are bits I can do, but I'd rather not do. That's like a cat swimming. It can, but it would rather not. So this partnership is going to be to deal with the swimming cat syndrome because this person swims very well.
Well, that sounds really interesting and exciting. I hope we get to hear more about it as we go forward. And of course, we'll get some updates from you, I'm sure. Neil Sykes from Clan Alchemy, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the Growth for Good podcast. Well, once again, my thanks to Neil Sykes from Clan Alchemy. If you enjoyed this conversation, please take a moment to follow, rate, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others to discover the show and to join the conversation about how we can build a fairer, more sustainable economy together. You can also watch and share every episode on YouTube or find more stories like this at drewhendry.scot. But until next time, thanks for listening.